Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends. People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right. Which is different than empathy, yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the evening of September 1st, 1998, a fight broke out in East Cleveland, Ohio, between two large groups of young men. Many were injured, including 20-year-old Ricardo Gray, who had been struck in the head with a pipe. When police finally arrived, they also discovered that a young man named James Russell had been fatally shot. Eventually, a narrative developed that Ricardo Gray had returned after the fight to exact revenge, leading to a sentence of 23 to life. But this is wrongful conviction. Wrongful conviction has always given voice to innocent people in prison, and now we're expanding that voice to you. Call us at 833-207-4666 and tell us how these stories make you feel and what you've done to help the cause, even if it's something as simple as telling a friend or sharing on social media. And you might just hear yourself in a future episode. Call us, 833-207-4666.
Hello, this is a free call from
Ricardo,
an inmate at the North Central Correctional Institution. To accept this free call, press 0. To refuse this free call, hang up or press 1. Thank you for using GTL.
Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction. And calling in today from an Ohio maximum security facility, we have Ricardo Gray on the line to share his story. Another wrongful conviction out of Cuyahoga County, where it appears the only evidence against him was fabricated witness testimony. So we hope to see his release really soon. Ricardo, I'm sorry you're here because of everything you've gone through and are going through, but thank you for joining us here today.
Yeah, I appreciate it myself.
And joining him, the person who's trying to bring about justice in this case, Kim Krall. Kim, thank you for taking up this fight.
Yeah, thanks for doing what you do.
Now, Cleveland, Ohio, of course, is one of the absolute hotbeds of wrongful convictions in this country. But before we get into how Ricardo's case is emblematic of that ongoing tragedy, we want to know a bit about your life before all of this madness took place.
I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, with my mom and my dad. I got an older sister. We stayed on Barlett, 143rd in Barlett. My mother and father, they had their own house down there. I had a sweet grandmama. I think that's where I get all my kindness from, too, because she'd give you her clothes off your back if you needed it. But, yeah, my father got incarcerated when I was, like, 14 for, like, 7 years, you know. When I really needed him in my life. And then my cousin had got killed too. In the same year my father went to jail. He was older. You know, I looked up to him like a brother. His name was Jarrell Gray. He went to Kent State University too. I didn't graduate from high school. I dropped out of school when I was in like the 11th grade. I was in the streets for real. I ain't gonna lie, I was in the streets. I had a family to take care of. My mama needed me, my baby mama and my daughter. I mean, I had to take care of them.
And not only did Ricardo feel responsible for his mother, but he had also started his own family with his girlfriend, Danica James.
Yeah, we just had one daughter together, Carielle. You know, we got together in high school. We was together for about 5 years. We stayed in Warrensville Heights. So I wasn't really in the neighborhood no more, for real, messing with the guys. Seemed like once I got my life together, they was mad at me, for real. So.
Now, Warrensville Heights was about 5 miles away from Ricardo's old neighborhood along Bartlett Avenue around East 143rd Street. And his friends there had a contentious relationship with the guys up on Kinsman Road about a half a mile away.
We right up the street from each other. We always end up getting into it with each other about something. About nothing, for real, but they make it something. We either playing basketball with each other, football. You know, it's just a neighborhood thing. Just boys being boys growing up. Everybody wanted to be hard, for real. That's all. Wanted to have a name for themselves.
With his new responsibilities, Ricardo had been keeping to himself, raising his daughter, who was not even 2 years old yet, when the crime in question occurred back on September 1st, 1998.
I just happened to come in the neighborhood one day. You know, they was having a little cookout in the neighborhood. So I just wanted to show the guys it was still love. So it's probably about 8:30. Somebody come back there in the cookout and say he just got jumped. One of my guys, Mike, he just got jumped by one of the Kinsman guys. It ain't that far from where we was at. It's right up the street. It had to be about 10 or 15 of us. So we go up there on 143rd and Kinsman into their neighborhood. It had to be about 20 or 30 of them.
So the police report says at approximately 2100 hours, a group of approximately 60 males began to congregate at the parking lot at the corner of East 143rd and Kinsman. Trouble had been brewing between a group of juveniles from Bartlett Avenue and the group from Kinsman. A fight started, and for approximately 1/2 hour, he heard random shots and bottles breaking.
During the fight, I got hit with a pole on the right side of my face. Dude knocked me out. I don't even know who hit me. That's the crazy part. But my guy told me, man, once you fell down, I picked you up and dragged you to Marquise Dudley's car and drove me to the hospital. At the hospital, I made a police report. So I really ain't really know what really happened until I came back and my friends told me what happened after I left. You know, they told me the guy Benny got the shooting and everybody ran.
A guy named Benny, whose last name didn't surface until many years later, was alleged to have fired into the crowd. Everyone scattered away and a young man named James D. Russell was dead. Detectives Sipo and Kovac arrived after his body had been transported, and they began to gather statements.
We have a statement from Edward McDowell, Edward Harris, Gary Blanchard, and from Deneen Joy Smith. Edward Harris reported being outside when the shooting started, but not observing anyone who was doing the shooting. He was just told by neighbors to go in the house. Edward McDowell says he was involved in a fight with the males from Bartlett Avenue when he heard gunshots. At this time, the fight broke up and everybody ran. He didn't see who was doing the shooting. Gary Blanchard says he went out on his front porch with the below interviewed female he lives with and saw the victim lying face down in the bushes on the side of his residence. He then left the porch area and went down to the victim and turned him over and noticed he was bleeding and foaming at the mouth. He then told his wife to call 911. Almost immediately, police began to arrive. He stated he recognized the male from the area but did not know his name. He described the shooter as having an Afro haircut and wearing a white t-shirt and blue jeans. He saw this male running toward Kinsman. And that last piece of information was never disclosed.
So I could never question Blanchard about the guy he seen. He identified the same guy that my witnesses identified at my trial. Dude with a short Afro haircut, blue jeans, with a white t-shirt on. He said he was the shooter. He seen him run towards Kinsman. But see, they never went to the Bartlett group and questioned them about what happened. And I didn't know Benny's full name. Didn't none of my guys know Benny's full name. And they were scared to talk to the police because, you know, snitching, people retaliate for that, you know.
So while the Kinsman guys who were initially interviewed omitted the shooter's name, they were at least in agreement with the Bartlett guys that the fight had ended when shots were fired. Only two young men said otherwise, Anthony Mixon and Arthur Jackson, who were interviewed the following day by a new lead detective on the case.
That's Detective Beeman. He the one that got the statements from Mixon and Jackson. But see, Detective Sipo and his partner, they was the first ones to the crime scene. But then the next day, things started to change. The statements changed.
So it appears the statements gathered by SIPO and Kovach were ignored and may have been hidden. And Beeman focused on the statements from Mixon and Jackson, who claimed that the shooting happened long after the fight, conveniently when all the other witnesses were gone and Ricardo Gray had been released from the hospital.
They said, "I done came back on a bike and shot down the street and struck the victim."
Arthur Jackson says he was walking northbound from Kinsman in company with his friend Mike, last name unknown, and the victim. He then observed a male he knows by the name of Ricardo Gray riding a mountain bike on East 143rd and began shooting at them. He says, as he, Mike, and the victim ran, they separated. The victim ran on the right side of the street and Mike on the left. He reports hearing bullets buzzing by his head while running.
Anthony Mixon claimed that he saw Ricardo ride past him on a bike, pull out a 9mm, and fire 14 rounds at the guys from Kinsman.
And what we now know is that the shooter was from the group that was with both Mixon and Arthur Jackson. And so, one, they have an interest in protecting kind of their own boy. But two, they had their own legal issues. They had issues with parole and probation, and they were subject to pressure and threats by police.
Next thing you know, I hear it's a warrant out for my arrest. My family telling me, just wait, don't turn myself in. So, you know, I'm listening to my family. We get a lawyer, Elmita Johnson. And the crazy part is I asked my lawyer at the time, was there a warrant for my arrest? She said, no, it ain't no warrant. So, you know, I went on living. They came and got me in November. I was at my baby mother's house, her mama house. And they came in there. They kicked the dough in and everything, came in there and got me.
You're listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said, my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Melissa Fumero.
And I'm Stephanie Beatriz. You may know us from television.
99.
And now we're here with our very own podcast, More Better with Stephanie and Melissa. We've known each other for thousands of years.
And we've been through it all together.
And we are totally killing it. We are literally the best.
No notes. Life is great.
None of that was true. JK, JK. Join us on our excellent adventure as we take on topics like listening to yourself,
There were a lot of red flags, and it did take me 8 years to get there, but I got there.
The challenge of self-care.
This is important because now you're about to be a mom of two kids.
And making friends as an adult.
We're going to share our struggles.
Just white-knuckling through life, babe.
We're going to speak to experts, and we're going to share everything we learn with you.
Listen to More Better with Stephanie and Melissa as part of the Michael Duda Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm in the county jail trying to put my defense together and everything. I gave them three witnesses' names that was there, but I had a speedy trial. They tried me within 90 days, and that wasn't enough time for my lawyer to really investigate my case for real.
It's very hard, especially from neighborhoods like this, to get people to come to testify on your behalf. It's very difficult to get anyone to come forward in situations like this because the police have the ability to put pressure on everybody. Everybody was there for a fight. Everybody is susceptible to like threats of charges, police intimidation. And so he has three witnesses who come forward who are consistent. He was hit with a pole, he was rendered unconscious, and he had to be treated at the hospital.
You know, when you get assaulted at the hospital, they automatically call the police and they come make a report. So the police report spells my first name wrong. He put Richard instead of Ricardo. They used that against me, said I was trying to falsify my name. And you know, I got the same address. It got my last name. He just ain't know how to spell my damn name. That's what it all boiled down to. But they put it on me. Look, he gave the wrong name. His name Ricardo. He gave him the name Richard with the same address and everything. Come on now.
Regardless of the effort to discredit this alibi evidence, it didn't matter. They had changed the timeline of the shooting to have occurred long after the fight, rendering this alibi moot.
See, they knew I could prove I was hit with a pole during the fight, so it couldn't have been me. See, when I couldn't prove that the victim was shot during the fight and shots was fired during the fight, I couldn't dispute what they were saying at my trial, that I came back.
Yeah, Anthony Mixon testified that Ricardo Gray rode past him on a bike and pulled out a weapon that appeared to be a 9mm and then watched him fire approximately 14 rounds. Arthur Jackson also testified that Ricardo Gray shot at him and his friends, that Gray rode toward them on the bike. Those are really the only two fact witnesses from the state.
See, the original investigator report and two other witnesses indicate that the shots was fired during the fight and everybody ran. So that's why they had to withhold that evidence.
It appears that the original police reports from Kovac and Sipo, with the statements confirming the defense timeline of the shooting, were either hidden from the defense or Ricardo's attorney neglected to use them to impeach Mixon and Jackson or raise Gary Blanchard's original statement when he got on the stand.
Gary Blanchard testified that when he heard the shots, I was outside when the first ones, that's when I went into the house. While you were in your house, you heard more shots fired? Yes. Did you ever see the person who was firing the shots? No, I was in my house with the door closed.
But that's not what he told police on the night of the shooting.
And that's why it would have been crucially important to have the statement that he made to police saying he saw someone running, described what they looked like, and believed them to be the shooter.
However, Ricardo's alibi witnesses also testified about the alternate timeline and suspect, Benny.
My three witnesses, London Hill, James Thomas, and Sharon Williams, that was there. They witnessed Benny do it, but they didn't know his last name. So, you know, the prosecutor told the jury, they made this name up. This guy doesn't even exist.
According to the prosecutor, Benny didn't even exist, and Ricardo's witnesses were his friends, the kind of testimony that is routinely discredited for proximity to the defendant, while Mixon and Jackson's testimony went unchallenged.
What's so crazy, once Arthur Jackson testified at my trial, they took me back to the county jail, and I remember one of the sheriffs said I knew he was lying.
But I guess the jury didn't pick up on what was so obvious to that sheriff. On February 18th, 1999, Ricardo was convicted and Judge Nancy McDonald sentenced him to 5 years for assault, 3 years for the weapons charge, and 15 to life for murder to run consecutively, adding up to a total of 23 years to life.
If I'd have had all these facts I got now, there ain't no way they would even had a trial against me, you know? Then nobody looked me in the eye. They just found me guilty. Shit broke my soul. That shit tore me up, for real.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Here I am, still in this damn place, man. But I got all the facts to prove what the hell going on, and I'm still in here.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Melissa Fumero.
And I'm Stephanie Beatriz. You may know us from television.
99.
And now we're here with our very own podcast, More Better with Stephanie and Melissa. We've known each other for thousands of years.
And we've been through it all together.
And we are totally killing it. We are literally the best.
No notes. Life is great.
None of that was true. JK, JK. Join us on our excellent adventure as we take on topics like listening to yourself.
There were a lot of red flags, and it did take me 8 years to get there, but I got there.
The challenge of self-care.
This is important because now you're about to be a mom of two kids.
And making friends as an adult.
We're going to share our struggles.
Just white-knuckling through life, babe.
We're going to speak to experts, and we're going to share everything we learn with you.
Listen to More Better with Stephanie and Melissa as part of the Michael Duda Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
They sent me straight to Lucasville, 20 years old, man, with all these killers and rapists. That's all they was doing was raping dudes down there, man. I did have to do 5 years down there before I could go to a close camp. I'm locked down 23 hours a day. I was mentally fucked up off that shit, man. My father died of cancer like 5 years after he got out of jail. But my father's been through the system, so he know how everything is going. So I didn't really have nobody helping me on my case no more once he died. I had to depend on my sister and my mama, and they had lives to live their damn self. So I was sitting here fighting in my case. You know, I taught myself how to read and write for real. I got my GED, taught myself how to look up cases, and taught myself how to type. I know how to file a whole brief and everything now.
While Ricardo did have appellate counsel, it never hurts to learn the law and advocate for yourself. And he got his first break just a few years after his conviction.
I had an investigator find Jackson, and he wrote an affidavit.
He says, 3 years ago, when I testified for the state against Ricardo Gray, for the state, my testimony was not completely true. I did not see Ricardo with a gun, nor did I see him shooting a gun at any time during the fight. When the shooting started, I began to run like everyone else did. I talked to the police that night and I told them I would come down to talk to them about the case. Before I talked to the police, some of the Kinsman boys told me to say Ricardo was a shooter. I did because they made me feel like they would do something to me if I did not say Ricardo was a shooter. I, Arthur Jackson Sr., made this statement of my own free will, dated May of 2002.
But the investigator gave it to my attorney. At the time, my attorney was Paul Mancino. And then Mancino, he went to go talk to Mixon personally himself because Anthony Mixon, the state witness, he was in jail for murdering his girlfriend.
He comes forward to say, my name is Anthony Mixon. At Ricardo Gray's trial, I testified that Ricardo Gray was on a bike shooting a gun. This testimony is not correct. The person shooting the gun was Benny, a dark-skinned, skinny black man with an Afro haircut. He has wide eyes and a real small head. I was pressured by the detectives to say that Ricardo Gray was there. I was on parole. And they told me that if I didn't say it was Ricardo Gray, I would go back to prison. Arthur Jackson was about 10 houses or more away and could not see who was shooting or who was shot. I have tried to tell my story, but nobody would listen. The above is true. Anthony Mixon, August 14th, 2002.
So then I had both of them. And then Mancino filed a motion for a new trial under newly discovered evidence. They starved me out for about 3 years. That was in 2006, man. They came up with some bogus ruling saying that this was the same evidence I used at trial.
Even though the defense's stance at trial was that Mixon and Jackson were lying, Ricardo most definitely did not have Mixon and Jackson's recantations at trial. And critically, their testimony was the only evidence against him.
So Nancy McDonald had a very long career as a sitting judge. She was known, I think, wildly by the defense community as being someone who had a penchant for injustice. But we know just in the last few years, there have been many wrongful convictions that have come out of her courtroom. Now, of course, when juries and prosecutors are involved, you can't shoulder the entire responsibility of wrongful convictions on a judge. But when we look at the number of years it's taken these folks to prove their innocence, that can be directly attributed to her. Because she has denied every single filing in front of her, no matter how compelling, like Ricardo's, those filings are. We know that Ralph Saylor's case was out of her courtroom. Isaiah Andrews, who spent one of the longest periods of wrongful incarceration in the history of the United States. Dwayne Brooks just came out of that courtroom. We have other cases, just like Ricardo's, that represent very serious, very obvious innocence claims that have just been denied and denied for decades. And it's because they were constantly put back in front of the same judge, Nancy McDonald.
You know, one would think that just one judge couldn't and shouldn't have that much power. There are other courts to appeal to.
Every effort you make to reopen your case based on new evidence, whether it's newly discovered because a witness just came forward or because the state withheld it or because of ineffective assistance of counsel, of your trial counsel, all of those are raised in the trial court. I bet if you were to go through her entire decades-long term on the bench, she didn't grant a single one. She didn't even grant a hearing on one. I mean, we had cases where, like, the shooter came forward and she was like, meh.
Now, all of a sudden, he's not credible anymore?
Yeah, he's not credible now, but then you get more evidence of his credibility and she's like, eh, that's not new. You've been saying you're innocent for years, so that's no longer a new theory of your case. Like, it's wild. And so, while there are a lot of factors that lead to wrongful convictions, the police, juries lowering their standard of beyond reasonable doubt, judges, and of course, prosecutors, overzealous prosecutors who care more about winning than justice, and lazy defense attorneys. All of those things contribute to wrongful convictions. But the one thing that maintains wrongful convictions are trial judges who don't give meaningful consideration to these claims. Because then when it goes to the Court of Appeals, they give deference to the trial court. The trial judge sat on the trial. They're the ones looking at this now. We're going to give deference to their decision. We don't sit in judgment of their decision unless it's arbitrary or absurd, which is a very high standard. And when you have someone like her who's been on the bench in a political climate for decades, they're not calling her arbitrary and absurd. They're affirming every single one of her crappy decisions. And we know they're crappy because so many of these men have now been exonerated. And we can literally attribute hundreds and hundreds of years of wrongful conviction to her unwillingness to consider these claims from her bench.
Even though finding new evidence appeared to be futile with Judge McDonald, Ricardo caught another break.
I found Benny's last name. That's when my guy, Quincy, but I call him Q. I was in Lucasville with him. Quincy told me he was in Toledo with Benny, and his last name is Kern. Benny told Q that I was in jail for something he did. That's how I got his full name. At the time, my lawyer was Brett Berner. So I told my appeal attorney to talk to Mixon again, and Mixon identified Benny Kern as the shooter. I filed another motion for a new trial. They denied it, talking about my lawyer ain't give a time frame of when I discovered the new evidence. So they shot that down.
Another break in the case came from a FOIA request. Along the way, someone on his legal team did a Freedom of Information Act request, but did not realize what they had discovered until moving on from the case and returning Ricardo's files.
So then when they send me my paperwork, I go through all my files. Bam, I see the original investigator report in here, Gary Blanchard police report, and Edward McDowell police report. I'm like, man, I'm looking at it like, man, this all the stuff to prove I ain't commit this crime. I never got this stuff in my trial. So bam, I end up filing the motion myself. That had to be like in 2014.
These police reports undermined Mixon and Jackson and the state's timeline of the shooting while validating Ricardo's alibi. If the shooting ended the fight, like these witnesses and the alibi witnesses said, then Ricardo's police report from the hospital was checkmate. This appears to be a major Brady violation.
So it's important to know some of the context of what was going in Ohio in terms of the way criminal trials were handled at that time. We didn't have open discovery. So there's no way of knowing what actually was and was not shared with defense, other than presuming that if a defense attorney had the information, they would have used it. Now, when Ricardo goes on to file all these things, he's saying, we obviously didn't have it because he would have used it if we had it. But the court says that without some affirmative proof that it was not turned over, he cannot meet his burden. Now, there is law in Ohio which contradicts those holdings, but there are holdings that support that perspective also. And so what the state is arguing is that you can't prove that it wasn't turned over, because all we used to do back then is the defense attorney would meet with the prosecutor would have the police reports, not share them or show them, but summarize what was said in them. And so there's no way to prove or disprove what might have been said in some back room, handing these things back and forth. It's a system that disfavors the truth, because how do you prove the absence of an occurrence?
Well, if it wasn't Brady, then it sure as hell was ineffective assistance of counsel. Nevertheless, Ricardo caught another break in 2020 when another witness came forward, Derek James, who said that he told police about Benny Kern the night of the shooting. But what good was any of it if it had to pass through Judge McDonald first?
This is awful, but for years, we were just waiting for her to leave the bench, which we knew she would not do on her own. It took, you know, an act of God to save our clients from like her ongoing reign of injustice. She died a few years ago, which the result is finally clients whose wrongful convictions arose out of her courtroom can get fair consideration.
Unfortunately, Ricardo did not benefit, as she passed in 2021 after he had already used up the Derek James affidavit. So to recap, all the evidence that this judge denied him on, the initial interviews with McDowell and Blanchard discrediting the state's timeline of the crime, the description of Benny Kern, all of which corroborated his alibi defense, multiple people identified Benny Kern along the way, not to mention recantations from the only material witnesses in this case.
And so all of those things together not only entirely undermine the state's claim, but present a meaningful case for who the actual wrongdoer is. And really, he should have had a hearing in 2002 when these initial affidavits came forward. But his judge denied him. The Court of Appeals just constantly affirms what the trial judge does. And the fact that he remains in prison. So when this case came to me, it's exactly where it is right now. All of this has been filed. And here we are 21 years later from those affidavits with an insurmountable amount of evidence supporting his innocence. And really, if I'm being honest, no procedural door to get into court for meaningful consideration. And so here we are, thinking artfully and creatively about how do we get that door open so that we can do the right thing for this innocent person. We have done it before at this office, and we will do it again. We will find a way to get this man back in court, because that's what justice requires. But we are up against a substantial mountain of procedural hurdles and procedural default.
To help facilitate that, we're going to link Kim's Instagram in the episode description. If anyone listening has information about this case, it could be the key to getting them back into court without Judge McDonald. So please reach out to her and help bring Ricardo home. We're also going to be linking a petition to help raise awareness about this horrible injustice. So please take a moment and join us. Sign it. And with that, now we're going to go to my favorite part of the show, which is called Closing Arguments. And it's where I thank you again for being here. Now I'm going to turn my microphone off and kick back in my chair and just listen to anything else you have to share with me and our amazing audience. So, Kim, why don't we start with you? And then, Ricardo, you take us off into the sunset.
At the end of the day, what we're looking for is to give Ricardo a chance at a fair trial, due process. We have no doubt he would be acquitted when presented with that opportunity, but he hasn't even had the chance to have his fair trial, his fair day in court yet. So I think Ricardo Gray's case is one of the most obvious claims of innocence we've ever seen. There was very little evidence to support a conviction to begin with, and all of it, every ounce of it, has been overturned. But the problem with his case is that it really highlights the failures of the criminal justice system to correct itself in every incident. And so his is one of those examples of where the criminal justice system has the tools to convict, but not the tools to overturn conviction. And so not only is this an opportunity to look meaningfully at his case, but at the rules of procedural default that keep people, innocent people like Ricardo Gray, in prison for 10, 20, 30 years before having a chance to even have a hearing, to have their day in court, or to present their claims in a way that the merits of their claims are considered. And so, you know, when listening to stories like this, it's important that we not only consider how we can help Ricardo Gray, but how we can expect more of the system and demand that judges, that people we elect to be in positions to make these choices, give consideration or be held accountable. And that when you get that jury summons, that you don't think, oh, I don't want to be a juror, but you think, this is my chance to hold the government accountable to its very high standard and to participate in preventing wrongful convictions, because that is the most minimal way we all get to participate and to change the system. And it would have made all the difference, a lifetime of difference, to Ricardo Gray if he had a jury who held the state to that very high standard to begin with.
I'm ready to go home, man. I'm tired. I'm sick and tired. I ain't but so strong, man. I need help, man. It's killing me. I'm trying not to start crying with around all these dudes in here, man. I can't show no sign of weakness in here. For real, I'm in here with lions. Oh, yeah, I just need some help, man, to show what the hell really going on here, man. I got all the facts. I just need help, man, to get me the hell out of here, man. I need to get home to my daughter, man. I done missed 20 years of my daughter's life, man. I wasn't able to raise my daughter, man. That's what fucked with me the most, man. I ain't been there with my family. I really just miss raising my daughter, man. That was the key part of everything. We done been through a lot through this whole thing, man. It's just time to go, man. 26 years, it's just out of control. They wrong, and they know they wrong. And they willing to keep me in here until I put it on the wall of what's really going on. If I don't put it on the wall of what's going on, they not going to do nothing, man. So I need help, you know. And I appreciate you today, man, for real.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer, Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford, doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.